He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
Welcome to Katz at Night, the John Katzimatidis Show. John Katzimatidis will be joining us on the phone very shortly from an undisclosed location. Is he on right now with us? Hi, John.
How are you?
We are doing
What's
well.
What's going on in New York?
New York, it is cold.
Snowy.
Snowy, nasty, and we miss you.
Well, you know, I had to make a trip down here in the Promised Land, Florida, and I'll be back by Sunday night.
Wonderful. In studio, we have Governor David Patterson. How are you, Governor?
I am good. Hope the weather is great down there, John.
The sun is shining.
Oh, and fresh from Florida, still sporting his nice little tan. There is Judge Weinberg.
I'm happy to be here, but I wish I was with John in Florida.
And also on the line with us right now is a man who never – he always has a problem speaking his feelings and telling us how he feels. He's a very calm individual.
Yeah, he's kind of passive-aggressive. He never really tells you how
he thinks
about
what he thinks.
Yeah,
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Senator Al D'Amato, welcome to Katz at Night. How are you, sir?
Healthy, happy new year to the gang at WABC. And of course, John knows where to hang his hat when the weather gets lousy. And I wish I were down there with him, you know.
Well, we're all going to go more often, I think.
I'm looking forward to it, John. As a matter of fact, I'd like to be one of those passive investors and get in on the ground floor if it's not too late. But we'll discuss that another time. given where this economy is headed, this inflation is just beginning to take off. And, you know, they come out and they announce these employment records. Oh, you know, we're employing more. Hey, take a look at the inflation records, you jackasses. Take a look at the fact that they're going to raise interest rates. Take a look at what's going on in the border. What a damn disgrace. This country, you don't enforce the law. You let criminals come over, people who are bringing drugs into this country, and over a million people a year, and almost all of them go on the welfare rolls in our states, and they smuggle them throughout. They don't let anybody know. They fly them at night into different places. You know, Biden makes his speech about the January 6th. And let me tell you, what took place January 6th was an outrage. Where the hell was the FBI? Why didn't they act? Why didn't people move with more expedition? Why did they have to take so long? You want to blame it all on the former president? And by the way, I don't give him good grades for handling that. That was a disgrace. All right? But here's Joe Biden. Oh, you know, I stand up for democracy. Bullshit. You're standing up for democracy and let
jump
the
that.
Law be.
No cursing, Senator D'Amato.
Pardon me?
You said the BS word. We have to be very careful. I'm getting a little shake of the hand from the control room.
What's wrong with that? That's a bad word?
Yes.
Everything?
Well, Senator D'Amato, this is David Patterson here. And the unemployment, employment numbers were half of what they were expected to be. The president got up and said, but the good news is unemployment is down to 3.9%. I don't know how that's corollary. I don't know how those two statistics work together.
They must be cooking the books.
You just hit the nail on the head. This is a joke. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you've got people discouraged. They've handled this crisis, I think, very poorly. Well, one day they say one policy, the next it's the other. Now we're going to order the pills, but we'll get the pills here, we'll get the pills there. I mean, this is nonsense, absolute nonsense. And I go right back to the first proposition that I put, the border. The law says that they are to be held to Mexico. Why aren't we having the law enforced? And why don't the Republicans get off their hineys and start offering legislation and talk about this every day? This impacts the whole country. This hurts us. It's wrong. We endanger people. We got drugs coming in here. People are dying unnecessarily. I don't understand it. And the media, they're silent. They're silent. What a conspiracy. CBS, ABC, NBC, CNN. They're horrible. So, you want to talk about cronyism? You want to talk about defeating democracy? Well, when you don't have a free and fair media, and we don't have one, you're hurting democracy.
So, Senator, you know, you have worked on the opposite side of the aisle with the Democratic Party before. And so I think you have a good sense of what the party's interests are. Would you remember another time in history when you thought that the party, and I'm talking about the opposite party from you, strayed from its own values more than now?
No, never. What's taken place, and I think I've mentioned this heretofore. My last 3 years as a senator, the radical or extremist on the right in the Republican Party began to really threaten people, etc. The NRA would say, unless you do X, Y, Z, we'll run a primary against you. And I saw many Republicans bow to terrible pressure. I never believed the Democrats have become five times worse on the left now. They've done the same thing, even more. And back then, Democrats and Republicans could work together. I remember when I had a family crisis, and I could not, I was supposed to go up to Watertown, New York, to announce that we were keeping this base. It was a big thing. It employs thousands and thousands of people.
Oh, I remember and I this.
And Senator Moynihan...
What happened to Senator Moynihan? Oh, did we lose his call, Senator D'Amato's call? I think he may have dropped.
This wouldn't be here were it not for Senator D'Amato.
Oh, he's back. He's back.
We used to work together.
Okay.
It wasn't. Yeah, today, you don't have that. Senator Dennis DeConcini, Arizona. He'd need help with a reservation out in Arizona.
I think
we're going to call him back. We have a bad connection with Senator D'Amato. Judge Weinberg, you wanted to say something?
Well, I think in fairness to what Senator D'Amato was saying, here you have former President Trump who's threatening to primary all the Republicans who don't work on his views in lockstep. And he's going to destroy the opportunities for the Republican Party to win back the House and win back the Senate because he's going to cause a civil war within the Republican Party. This business that if you don't agree with someone 110% of the time, you get primaried is very dangerous politically, and it's not good for bipartisan relationships or internal cohesion in a political party.
You know, Your Honor, that is really the only hope that the Democrats would have of trying to maintain the House, which I think is already lost. But it would be if the Republicans got into this kind of internecine struggle over ideology, when any of them that won the primary could theoretically beat the Democrat. But if they're going to insist on the one that's the furthest to the right, then they're going to make the same mistake that the Democratic Party is making right now.
We have Senator D'Amato back on the line. Senator D'Amato, what was your reaction to seeing kind of what they were doing about the January 6th anniversary yesterday? Kamala Harris likened it to Pearl Harbor and 9/11. She said they were all three were terror attacks.
Let me tell you, it wasn't a terror attack, but it was handled very poorly by the administration, by the president at the time, who should have gotten off his rump. You notice I didn't say ass. And done.
We noticed that. We take judicial notice of that, Senator. Okay.
I want you to take notice. He was wrong. He should have acted with more speed. Should have said, knock it off. Stop it. But, you know, that's history. However, having said that, the fact of the matter is democracy worked. The fact of the matter is that Republicans and Democrats came together. Yeah, there were a handful who said, oh, no, he lost. Yeah, he did lose. And let me tell you, he lost it because he blew it in the beginning, not afterwards, not when the election was held. He could have challenged those laws, when I say he, the Republicans could have challenged those law changes in Pennsylvania, in Georgia, in another states prior to the election, not after.
Senator, you're absolutely correct. The time to act is when the renegade state Supreme Court in Pennsylvania started rewriting the election laws, and when the Georgia Secretary of State entered into that consent decree. You couldn't be more correct than that, Senator.
And that's what you do it. And he got terrible legal advice. I don't care if Giuliani's your greatest friend in the world. He was horrible. Horrible. He didn't win one case. Just went around screaming, yelling, et cetera, like he always did. Everybody's thinking, why don't you get? You know, loyalty is loyalty, okay? So here he is, the mayor of New York, a Republican, and you got Governor Cuomo, right? Mario Cuomo, 3 weeks before the election. What does Andrew do? You all forgot. He flew around the state campaigning for Mario Cuomo. Do you remember that?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Where's loyalty to the Republican Party? Tell me about it. Loyalty is to himself. That's what it is.
That was a shocking outcome. And at the time, Governor Cuomo was 15 points ahead in the polls, and then Governor Pataki won. And that really demonstrated why it was such a bad idea for the mayor to do that.
Well, let me tell you why. Why did he do that? Because he wanted to be the number one Republican. He didn't want to have a Republican governor. He wanted to be the mayor. And Mr. Republican, okay? And he hasn't changed at all. He's all about himself. He went over to the Ukraine. He made a...
Putin heard him now. Uh-oh. Rudy got a hold of him. John Katsimatidis, are you there?
If this was soccer, that would have been the senator's third red card.
John, do you, what was your reaction? I want to hear what you thought of... You know, do you feel like it's almost like a diversionary tactic in a way, the way the a lot of people keep going on and on about January 6th, and we have a lot of other problems at our present day?
Well, listen, look, they almost tore down half the country in 126 different cities, and nobody went to jail. And it does smell. It was all wrong, but it does smell that Nancy Pelosi and the Capitol Police did not call in reserves. Okay? So, I mean, there's something more to this story than people know about.
And it's also...
And hopefully we'll find out someday. But Nancy Pelosi, the Capitol Police, the Washington Police, were supposed to call in reserves. Because if you have that many people approaching the Capitol, you needed more help. And they did not do it. So, was the whole situation wrong? Yes. But I think there's contributory negligence to what happened. And I don't
think
John,
the negligence
comes
after what happened. In other words, if they weren't prepared, that wouldn't be the first time that law enforcement wasn't prepared. Law enforcement wasn't prepared right here in New York City for some of the turmoil after the George Floyd case.
But it was on David Battison. It was on purpose. I mean, I remember watching on television. There were mobs walking into Macy's and walking out with the entire store, and the police were told to back off.
No,
who do you want to blame there?
No, I'm not disputing that. But what I'm saying is that when that situation got out of hand, the people who came to that march, not the ones who just protested and left, which the president was one of them, by the way, but the people who went in the Capitol and did what they did. It had just never been seen before. It was unique.
Oh, it's been seen before. People, not in mobs like that. But I also remember...
In the United States Capitol, it hasn't been seen since the British were there.
In May of 2020,
No. Right. United States Capitol.
Trump, when he was at the White House under lockdown, and they were going to put him in the basement of the... in the super secure room... Because the mobs were going to break into the White House. Do you remember that?
And you also had a shooting, John, in the House of Representatives by Puerto Rican radical activists in the 1950s, and people were hurt badly. I think, in fact, might have been killed.
Well, the mayor of Chicago was killed.
In May of 2020. Right? This was in May of 2020, right outside of the White House. Mobs of far-left rioters tried to storm the White House. I can retweet the video for you. They were repelled by police. They were assaulted and hit with projectiles. And, you know, this was a riot, too. I can show you the video. So it did happen before.
There's wrongdoing, but I don't think the American people know the whole entire story. And we don't know why the Capitol Police, why the Washington Police, why Pelosi, who's in charge of the Washington Police, did not call in reserves to help them. When you have that many people going down the Capitol, you always call in reserves. All right? I mean, let's move on. We said this 38 times already. And, you know, I'm not there. And I get emotional about it because I think there's a lot of the story we just don't know.
I agree, John Catsimatidis. Senator D'Amato, we have a minute left. What else do you want to tell all America?
Let me say this to you. We stick to our guns about people being encouraged to work, about less government, not more government, about doing the right thing for all the people, and not just trying to take over and jam through laws and pack the court. Let's work in a bipartisan manner. And that's what we need today. I always thought that public service was fabulous. I would never encourage anybody as it relates to public service in Washington today in the climate that we have, where people, instead of working together, are fighting to be one up. That's not what this government
Senator,
is about.
Let me ask you this question. What do you think about this push now to change the rules of the filibuster?
Horrible. Horrible. Because let me tell you something. Then whoever gets in, if they have a one-vote margin, they change all the rules. They change everything. They change the manner in which elections are held, and they impose them on states. You have like what New York City has got. We're going to have aliens voting. You don't have to be a citizen. You can vote. Is this the kind of nonsense that this country is coming to?
I mean, the fact that there's U.S. senators threatening the Supreme Court that if they get out of hand, that they're going to pack the Supreme Court. I mean, what kind of nonsense is this?
And we're going to bring in more states just so that one party can dominate over another. That's wrong. One party does it once. The other party takes control. So we'll take a couple of islands that are favorable to Republicans and bring them in and make them part of the country. Is that
we're
what
gonna we're
going to
make Staten Island a state.
What?
You Staten know, Island a state, that's right.
Not a bad idea.
Well, guys, it's Friday afternoon. Thank you a lot for all being there. And
TGIF.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday.
Thank you so much, Senator Al D'Amato. John Catsimatidis will stay on the line. This is Cats at Night. And coming up, we have Larry Kudlow. He'll tell us what the heck is going on with the economy.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Catsimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
Welcome to John Catsimatidis, Cats at Night. John Catsimatidis, how's it going down in Florida?
Well, the sun is still shining, and I'm telling you, it's not a bad place to be for a few days. I understand do we have our next guest on the line now, Larry Kudlow?
We do.
Well, a longtime advisor to President Trump, an economist and advisor to Ronald Reagan, one of the smartest people I know about the economy. With us is Larry Kudlow. How are you, Larry?
I'm good, John. I'm just trying to figure out why you're in Miami and I'm in New York City.
Well, I heard there was snow coming, and I escaped on Thursday night. Actually, you know, Margo celebrates every year Russian Christmas, Russian New Year, and her mom started that tradition with the Russian Heritage Foundation 26 years ago. And when her mom passed, Margo is continuing with that tradition, respecting her forefathers on behalf of her mom and respecting her mother that way. And we did a big press conference today, and tomorrow we have a big gala celebrating Russian New Year and we did not invite Putin.
Well, good for Margot. And
I got a quick funny one. Baker, Mayor Baker, who was Russian, was the former mayor in St. Petersburg, and he met with Putin like about 10-15 years ago in New York. And Putin is 5'6", and Mayor Baker is like 6'11". Putin refused to take a picture with him because he didn't want to look that short.
Smart.
Putin is 5'6".
Putin's got even more trouble now besides the Ukraine. He's got an uprising in Kazakhstan. Big problem.
He sent troops in, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes, he did. And the pro Putin government is losing favor and support. So Putin may start thinking twice about his whole situation, including the Ukraine. The talks on the Ukraine start on Monday, and then they're going to continue all next week with NATO and various security groups. So this is a tough story. But the Kazakhstan, Kazakhstan is rich with oil and natural gas. That complicates matters for Putin quite a bit, which is good. I'm glad. Life should be very complex for that jerk.
Tell us how you really feel.
For who does the oil really belong to? That's the $64 trillion question. Larry, you're a longtime advisor to President Trump. Have you given him any advice lately that you want to share with us?
look, I'm in touch with the former president quite a bit. And all I can say is I'm glad that he did not hold a formal press conference on January 6th. I think that was the right move. Mm-hmm. I thought his statements criticizing President Biden were very good. I mean, Biden had a not-so-hidden agenda. They'd love to use January 6th to cover up all the mistakes they've made and how his presidency is on the decline. And, of course, they want to federalize or nationalize election law. They're not really getting to the bottom of what happened on January 6th with respect to security breakdowns. So I'm glad. I thought President Trump played his cards just about right, John.
Understood. Where do you think we're going? It seems like the jobs went down again. It looks like interest rates will increase in the near future. It looks like inflation continues. It looks like oil continues to increase. What say you?
Well, the jobs report today was a mixed bag. The payrolls were underperforming, although with revisions, they did go up about 340,000. It wasn't the 455 the market wanted. But the other side of that coin was a lot of strength. The household survey was up 651,000. After 1.1 million last month. And importantly, the unemployment rate has fallen again to 3.9%. And wages were very, very strong. Average hourly earnings up 0.6%. The so-called wage proxy, hours worked times average hourly earnings is running about 9 or 10%. So if you're in the Federal Reserve, you're going to look at this number with difficulty, and it's going to push them to tighten policies faster and more aggressively. That's my take. Jim Bullard, the president of the St. Louis Fed, who's a friend, I think he's the smartest guy in the FOMC. He's saying they got to raise rates by March. I think they should raise rates right now, to be honest with you. You're going to get a CPI number, I guess it's next week or so, that's going to be at least 7% year on year. So this is going to be a tough story, a difficult story. The Fed, when you run from zero inflation to 7% in a year, 18 months, the Fed's got to take action to stop it, John. It may not end happily. That's the risk here. Right now we're in an inflationary boom, but you give them a year of tightening and they're going to do more than anybody thinks, including themselves. That's my forecast. So this story may not have a happy ending. There's no soft landing out there. So I'd be very, very careful right now.
Larry, it's Richard Weinberg. So what do you see happening with this effort to get the BB bill, the Build Back Better bill, resuscitated in the early part of this year?
Save America, kill the bill.
I agree 100%. I understand there was a report this afternoon that Bill Clinton himself called our senator from West Virginia and Obama and
Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah Winfrey?
Yes.
Oh, well, that must have been the most important one. knowing our senator from West Virginia, does that move him an inch?
Nope. Not an inch. Not even a millimeter. I don't even know what a millimeter is, but he won't even move
a millimeter. Well, I'll tell you the truth. I'm disappointed. If President Clinton called him, I'm disappointed in the fact that he called.
Yeah, because Bill Clinton was, to coin a phrase, a common sense Democrat. I don't know where I heard that phrase, but
somewhere
wrote it. Someone just did a very good video on that. I liked it. I thought it was a terrific video, John. But yeah, Clinton's a disappointment. The others are not disappointments. Look, Manchin's not going to move because his basic fundamental issue is more spending equals higher inflation, and the inflation rate is rising. And there's nothing to stop it. So I don't believe it. I mean, in West Virginia, his polls are way, way up. In fact, he doubled his favorables because he's doing the right thing. You're not going to move him. I think the whole thing is dead. I hope it's dead. I'm going to continue to work to kill it. I don't think the country wants it. Inflation is the number one issue, and we do not need more and more spending. We don't need it. That was the source of the inflation problem to begin with.
And what about Senator Schumer?
Larry Kudlow, I stand next to you that I think it should be killed. It'll push inflation to even higher rates. And you know, it just doesn't make sense at this point in time.
You've got some crazy people now. We had a segment on our show about this. We need more money to fight Omicron COVID. No, we don't. We don't even know where the money is in the first place. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of House members on. They can't even track the money. We don't need more spending. What we need is less spending. And what we need is to make the Trump tax cuts permanent. And what we also need is to stop picking on the fossil fuel industry, which is keeping America alive, heated, and on the road. I mean, these are gigantic mistakes. And so all this BBB stuff, which would make the problem tremendously worse. So you and I are completely together on this. And Manchin is your common sense Democrat. Maybe Kyrsten Sinema. There may be a few others that haven't been heard from yet. But no, I think the bill is dead. And I told Governor Patterson, you know, to go and fix that.
I know.
So I had to kill. So I went out and I acted on my own and I killed the bill.
You saved America.
Well, you've done us all a favor, Larry.
Yes, you did,
now,
Larry.
You've got this other thing. I got to tell you, came up on my show today, Governor Patterson, this idea from Governor Hochul that therapies and other COVID aids should be handed out to minority groups first, to non-white minority groups, is a really bad idea. It's a divisive idea. It runs counter to American values. I mean, it's extremely disappointing that she is pushing this idea that any therapies that come out should first go to the minority groups.
You know, Larry, it would have been the easiest thing to have simply said that we're going to try to attack the areas where the virus has hurt the most. In doing that, you haven't made any statement about race or national origin or anything like that, and you would probably be able to bring more resources into those neighborhoods that were the hardest hit. But what boggles the mind is why you would deliberately want to associate it in a way as if there was a racial preference. Because racial preference is what we've been fighting for 150 years the other way around. So why turn around and now that the opportunity presents itself to do exactly the reverse of what we've been fighting?
And you have a real legal issue here, a real constitutional issue under the Equal Protection Clause.
Yeah, well, Steve, no. By the way, David, you're right. I agree 100% with everything you just said. You could have gotten this thing done. And so, look, in these neighborhoods, for heaven's sakes, they may be low-income neighborhoods. You may have lots of nationalities, lots of ethnic groups. You don't have to call one out over the other. I'm so tired of this racial division stuff, whether it's regarding COVID or whether it's regarding schools or whether it's regarding housing loans. You see it time and time again. The Biden administration, with this critical race theory stuff, it's just un-American. It violates our values and probably violates our laws, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're talking about the monoclonal antibody treatments, the COVID testing, the therapeutics. Shouldn't it should just be based on how seriously ill someone is and not on the color of their skin.
I mean, I'm hoping, look, this Omicron stuff is probably peaking. People are getting it left and right, but it's not serious. I mean, I got people on my team here who tested positive, so they're home. But they're working from home. They're in fine shape. And what's going to happen is they will get natural immunity, and we will move closer and closer to herd immunity. Omicron may be a blessing in disguise. But to try to racialize this and cause these kinds of divisions, to me, is unpardonable. New York City is a great place. You know, why pit one group against another? And this Governor Hochul person should have never gone that way. And she should have talked to David Paterson about it. And she should retrace. She should retrace and said, wait a minute, we looked at it wrong. We're going to change our approach. That would be statesmanship.
Who elected her anyway? Well, thank you so much, Larry Kudlow. Did you see the joke there, by the way? Nobody elected her. Anyway, thank you so much, Larry Kudlow, so much.
Nobody elected her anyway, and I'm waiting for my free ticket to Miami.
I think we know somebody with a plane.
We all are waiting. We're all waiting.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Larry Kudlow. Great conversation with you. And coming up, we'll be talking more about COVID and Omicron with Dr. Mark Siegel. John Katz and the D's. Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night show. We have on the line for us right now Dr. Mark Siegel. Dr. Mark Siegel, how are you? COVID, is it getting under control? Are we any closer to community immunity?
Well, we're getting there. By the way, Kudlow is a very tough act to follow, so I'm honored. Not just the honor of being on your show. We're getting there. I think that the upside of all of this spread is that we get more and more immunity. And the amount of spread has got to be 5 to 10 times what you're actually seeing in case numbers. And it's a milder variant. It isn't affecting the lungs as much. You know, there is a risk with it. It's not clear how much long-term side effects there'll be. Clearly, with earlier variants, we saw a lot. We're seeing less with this. We're not having the same sense of smell or taste loss. And again, the lung involvement isn't the same. You don't want to get this, but if you have to get it, you end up with some immunity as a result. And also, the immunity you get works against other variants as well. So that's good. I still am in favor, big favor of the vaccine and the booster, though. And what I'm most afraid of is the left overly politicizing this in a way where the fear predominates, even if we end up getting in better shape here. And one more point, we definitely got into this mess by under-vaccinating the world. I mean, you know, these variants are occurring. That's not by accident. They're occurring because the vaccine has really been hoarded and we didn't export the technology to other countries. Not the vaccine, mind you, but the technology, and Moderna has been hoarding vaccines. Having said all of that, I do think that we're heading into a better place.
What do you say to people that are worried about going out? Do you need to be a hermit, stay locked up, and not associate with the outside world?
No, of course not. And the biggest fear of the politicization of this is closures. I mean, what is all of that? You know, closures come from 1918. Haven't we learned anything in 100 years? They closed things down in 1918 because they didn't even know what a virus was, really. And it was for a virus way less contagious than this. I mean, if you stay at home, you're going to spread the virus at home, probably in your elevator. So the whole idea of closing things costs the economy, costs us psychologically, and I think it's time we come out of that mindset. I am in favor of rapid testing and having it available. And I am in favor, again, of more vaccine technology and the treatments. You know, I call the current administration's efforts Operation Snail Speed. I mean, seriously.
Operation Snail Speed. That's funny. John Katsimatidis, what goes through your mind when you see Florida's wide open in New York City? I'm looking out right now in Midtown, and it's quiet. It's dead.
What goes through my head? That everybody wants to be more careful. I think a lot of people escape the inner city because of the additional rules in the inner city, and either go out to Suffolk County where they have homes in the Hamptons, or go down to Florida, where I'm at this weekend. The city is going to suffer, and that's what our concern is. We talked about it the other day, that New York City is going to suffer, and the people who suffer is not people like me. It's people, the waiters that are working in restaurants, the busboys, the Uber drivers, the taxi drivers. It's the working people of New York City that are suffering, and it's a sin.
It's become fear more than virus. I think it's everybody's so afraid they're going to catch this thing when they don't realize that the thing they're catching is much milder than what we had before, especially if you have prior immunity from infection or whether you had the vaccine and the booster. All of that works. Again, we need the treatments. We don't have the antibodies. We don't have the testing. But the fear is becoming the bigger virus now. And I'm so concerned about what John just said, the things are going to be shut down and closed down. Schools are where the big battlefield are. I mean, if the teachers' unions want to open their mouths, let them make sure all their teachers are vaccinated, period.
Dr. Siegel, it's Richard Weinberg. I want to ask you a two-part question.
The banks closed down. Citibank has allowed some of their people to stay home and work, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, and it's disappointing because, you know, somewhere along the line, we're all in the risk business, and we should all be extra careful. Extra careful, all of us, take our temperatures, take tests often, but we can't shut down the country every time there's a fear attack.
Dr. Siegel, so yes. My two-part question is, number one, operationally, with respect to these racial preferences to giving treatment modalities to people that's coming out of the State Department of Health and the State Department of Health, how would that work operationally? And two, doesn't that raise a real ethical issue for doctors?
Wow. I thought when I first reported on this the other day that maybe it was an ideological issue and that it wouldn't come out in the real world. But I have to tell you, I just tried to order Paxlovid on somebody and there it was right on the screen.
Yes.
What race is the patient? Not the real questions, by the way, which is
wow.
The patient.
Wow. That is a wow.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. Is
right. It actually said on your computer when you wanted to
yes.
order a drug for the patient, what race is your patient?
You bet.
Somebody has to go to jail for that.
Now, look, to be fair, I mean, I'm no believer in this in a million years, but I want to know if the patient's obese. I want to know if they're a diabetic. I want to know if they're a frontline worker, to the point you just made. I want to know, you know, who's at risk. And I do understand that minority communities have come to get care late. They have a distrust of the medical establishment. But there's no way that I want anybody having preferences, because that means somebody else doesn't get a preference, doesn't it? And I don't want to say, look, I can't get you the drug because you're white. Are you kidding me?
I said earlier on the show, I believe, Dr. Siegel, it's totally illegal and unconstitutional. I think it's morally wrong, it's divisive for this country, and it's unconstitutional to have that kind of racial preference to health care.
There's one exception to that, and it doesn't apply here. I'll give you one exception. Black men are twice as likely to get prostate cancer and to get severe prostate cancer. So when I go screening, I consider that. That's not true here. It's not a genetic issue. It's an ideological one, and it's absolutely inexcusable.
Could there be a lawsuit on somebody's hands here? I mean, if I want to get it and I'm being denied something based simply on the color of my skin, can't I sue the hospital? Can't I sue the state or somebody?
Well, it might be the case, Lydia. Go ahead.
If I had a legal degree, I would call it a class action suit.
John, you're an honorary lawyer, and I agree with you.
And I would also add one thing, which is the scarcity is the biggest problem of all. I mean, that's also a disgrace. Maybe people have a lawsuit against the federal government for approving this drug and getting us none of it. And John Katsimatidis and I talked about this last time it was on. How about you buy it in advance? It's simple. It's something that the Trump administration did. You buy it in advance. You want Pfizer to gear up and produce the drug, you buy it in advance. Same with the monoclonal antibodies.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Mark Siegel. We have another guest coming up on the line, and we want to make sure we have enough time for him. We are going to have former NYPD Commissioner Ray Kelly. We're going to be talking about all the craziness going on here in New York City with the Manhattan District Attorney wants to do, basically decriminalize everything, that and much more. Keep it right here on Cats at Night.
It's a common sense recap of the big stories. It's Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
Welcome back to Cats at Night, John Katsimatidis, and we got a TriCast going on, and this will be the way it'll from going forward. So you are listening to us here at 77 WABC, WLIR 107.1, as well as AM 970, The Answer. On the line with us right now, we have former NYPD Commissioner Ray Kelly, who also happens to be the father of a quirky radio host here, Greg Kelly. Welcome, Commissioner Kelly. How are you, sir?
What's up with the quirky?
He's a little quirky. I was just reading one of his tweets, the quotes and the capitalization. He's funny.
Yeah, well, he's a thinker. He thinks about a lot of things, and he tweets a lot.
Well, speaking of thinking, the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, is basically going to decriminalize everything from prostitution to stalking to fare evasion to armed robbery. He's going to make it a
resisting
misdemeanor.
Arrest.
Resisting
obstruction
arrest.
Obstruction of government administration.
Commissioner Kelly, what will this do to New York City? I mean, I know it's Manhattan, but I mean, the repercussions, it's unbelievable.
You know what's strange here? Alvin Bragg advertised this during his campaign. There were eight people running for New York County District Attorney, and in many ways he seemed to be moderate, but he put this out. He was against incarceration only in extreme situations, and 86,000 people voted for him, and a population of 1.6 million in Manhattan. So this is going to have dramatic impact, as you say, not only in Manhattan, but it'll spill over to other boroughs. It's obviously bad public policy, and who is he to do this? It takes prosecutorial discretion to an absolutely absurd level. I've never seen a public official lay out such an indictment against himself in a document like this. And he, in the document, there's no reason why he's doing it. He doesn't give a rationale. He starts off by saying, hey, when he was a young man, he had guns pointed at them by the police and by other people. But there's no reason, there's no problem that this is supposedly addressing. But I think he's very, very much focused on doing this. And as I say, he talked about this for quite a while, talked about it really for years.
Commissioner Kelly, John,
cops in a very difficult position, too.
Right. Commissioner Kelly, John Katsimatidis, in response to Bragg's, I know he called it a memo, but it's more like a manifesto. John Katsimatidis, you put out a public service announcement. Tell him about it. Tell us about it.
No, we put out an announcement that we believe in law and order, and we don't mind bail reform for minor crimes, one ounce of marijuana, et cetera, et cetera. But for people using guns, knives, threatening other citizens, and practically said, go directly to jail, do not pass go, do not collect $200, go to jail. I mean, if you're threatening other citizens with guns and knives, et cetera, go to jail. And that anybody... And I called upon the state assembly and I called upon the state senate that whoever is going to vote for bail reform, we're going to let the world know about it. You can run for office, but you cannot hide. If you're going to be pro-criminal, we're going to let the world know about it. And you have to make a decision like they did in Nassau County. You're either for law and order in our streets or for pro-criminal.
Well, this goes way beyond bail reform. He's taking it upon himself to give a pass to robbers. You can do a robbery and only be charged with with a misdemeanor. And of course, subways are now free in Manhattan. He said he's not going to prosecute any fare evasion people engaged in that. It's an open invitation to resist arrest, of course. Even trespass, it's one of the complaints in some of the poorer neighborhoods. People get into the hallway, they congregate there, they're smoking weed, and it is a constant call to 911 or 311. Now, that's it. Nobody can be charged with trespass. So it's really absurd, but this is the product of George Soros and his efforts to radicalize prosecutors throughout the country. It hasn't worked anywhere. There's a recall effort in San Francisco for the district attorney who took a similar position. Chicago, Philadelphia, St. Louis, they all have this issue. But Soros is a very sneaky guy. He did this under the radar screen, and all of a sudden we have Soros-backed attorneys in 25 cities throughout this country. And George Soros gave $1 million to the campaign of Alvin Bragg. So it's very problematic. I don't know how we get out of it easily, but we're going to see if someone, and unfortunately, I think we're going to see someone seriously injured or killed who has been let go under these policies. And they'll see what the reaction is to Mr. Bragg then.
What can we do? I know that the governor we've been talking about it here. Governor Pataki said that he could possibly, the Governor Hochul, it's basically in her hands. She could remove Bragg from office. Commissioner Kelly, how likely do you think that is to happen?
I think it's very unlikely. Even if there was a recall vote, the advocates would drum up a lot of support for Mr. Bragg. So I think, unfortunately, they're going to be stuck with it. I'm a resident of Manhattan. Obviously, I made less safe in my own borough as a result of this. But I think we're going to have to live with this for 4 years, unfortunately. And we'll see if maybe the power of public opinion can push him off of this position. Right now, He's pretty arrogant about it. He is, and this was day one he did this. He didn't try to slip these things in gradually. This was in your face. This is what we're going to do in Manhattan. Now, I think it's disgraceful, but we're going to have to live with it in Manhattan. And I think it will spill over into other boroughs because these district attorneys in our city, certainly some of them are sort of bending in the progressive direction, certainly in Brooklyn. So it's going to be a tough time.
Commissioner Kelly,
we
have a minute left. I wanted to ask you. So Mayor Adams, he ran on a ticket of law and order, and he's still supporting this guy. He's still saying he's a great candidate, great DA, and now he just, his brother is going to be, what is his brother going to be? Eric Adams, Bruno. Deputy Mayor, Deputy Police Commissioner, and then you have Philip Banks, Deputy Mayor for Public Safety, who's the brother of David Banks, a big family affair. Do you feel like we're being hoodwinked here?
Well, Phil Banks worked for me, and he did a very good job. So I'm a fan of Chief Banks. But I think this really makes it difficult for Eric Adams to carry out what he's been saying that he's going to do in terms of addressing crime. Certainly, Manhattan is sort of the bellwether borough. What happens in Manhattan, it spreads throughout the country and the world. So it's going to be difficult. He says he's going to sit down with Mr. Bragg, and we'll see what comes out of that meeting. I don't know if he supported his policies, but I think he said he would.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Commissioner Kelly. We'd love to have you come back anytime to discuss this issue more. John Katsimatidis, you want to say goodbye to everybody?
God bless America, and I'll be back at work on Monday.
All right. Thank you, guys.